Gulliver's Travels, Part 4, Chapter 9. The author's dangerous voyage. He arrives at New Holland, hoping to settle there. Is wounded with an arrow by one of the natives. Is seized and carried by force into a Portuguese ship. The great civilities of the captain, the author arrives at England. I began this desperate voyage on February 15, 1715, at 9 o'clock in the morning. The wind was very favorable, however, I made use at first only of my paddles. But considering I should be weary, and that the wind might chop about, I ventured to set up my little sail, and thus, with the help of the tide, I went at the rate of a league and a half an hour, as near as I could guess. My master and his friends continued on the shore till I was almost out of sight, and I often heard the sorrel nag, who always loved me, crying out, "Nua ila, nua maha yahoo!" Take care of thyself, gentle yahoo. My design was, if possible, to discover some small island uninhabited, yet sufficient, by my labor, to furnish me with the necessaries of life, which I would have thought a greater happiness than to be the first minister in the politest court of Europe. So horrible was the idea that I conceived of returning to live in the society and under the government of yahoos, for in such a solitude as I desired, I could at least enjoy my own thoughts and reflect with delight on the virtues of those inimitable Hohenhenims without an opportunity of degenerating into the vices and corruptions of my own species. The reader may remember what I related when my crew conspired against me and confined me to my cabin, how I continued there for several weeks without knowing what course we took, and when I was put ashore in the longboat, how the sailors told me with oaths, whether true or false, that they knew not what part of the world we were. However, I did then believe us to be about 10 degrees southward of the Cape of Good Hope, or about 45 degrees southern latitude, as I gathered from some general words I overheard among them, being, I suppose, to be southeast of their intended voyage to Madagascar, and although this were little better than conjecture, yet I resolved to steer my course eastward, hoping to reach the southwest coast of New Holland, and perhaps some such island as I desired lying westward of it. The wind was full west, and by 6 in the evening, I computed, I had gone eastward at least 18 leagues, when I spied a very small island about 1/2 league off, which I soon reached. It was nothing but a rock, with one creek naturally arched by forest of tempests. Here I put in my canoe, and climbing a part of the rock, I could plainly discover land to the east, extending from south to north. All night I lay in my canoe, and repeating my voyage early in the morning, I arrived in 7 hours at the southeast point of New Holland. This confirmed me in my opinion. I had long entertained that the maps and charts of this country at least 3 degrees more to the east than really is, which I thought communicated many years ago to my worthy friend Mr. Herman Mole, and gave him my reasons for it, although he has rather chosen to follow other authors. I saw no inhabitants in the place where I landed, and being unarmed, I was afraid of venturing far into the country. I found some shellfish on the shore and ate them raw, not daring to kindle a fire for fear of being discovered by the natives. I continued 3 days feeding on oysters and limpets to save my own provisions, and I fortunately found a brook of excellent water which gave me great relief. On the 4th day, venturing out a little too far, I saw 20 or 30 natives upon a height not 500 yards from me. They were stark naked, men, women, children, around a fire, as I could discover by the smoke. One of them spied me, and gave notice to the rest. 5 of them advanced toward me, leaving the women and children at the fire. I made what haste I could to the shore, and getting into my canoe, I shoved off. The savages, observing me retreat, ran after me, and before I could get far enough into the sea, discharged an arrow which wounded me deeply on the inside of my left knee. I shall carry that mark to my grave. I apprehended the arrow might have been poisoned, and paddling out of reach of their darts, being a calm day, I made a shift to suck the wound and dress it as well as I could. I was at a loss what to do, for I durst not return to the same landing place, but stood to the north, as I was forced to paddle, for the wind, though very gentle, was against me, blowing northwest as I was looking about for a secure landing place. I saw a sail to the north-northeast, which, appearing every minute more visible, I was in some doubt whether I should wait them out. But at last my detestation of the yahoo race prevailed, and turning my canoe I sailed and paddled together to the south, and got into the same creek whence I sent out in the morning, choosing rather to trust myself among these barbarians rather than live with European yahoos. I drew up my canoe as close as I could to the shore, and hid myself behind a stone by the little brook, which, as I have already said, was excellent water. The ship came within 1/2 league of this creek, and sent her longboat with vessels to take in fresh water, for the place, it seems, was very well known. But I did not observe it till the boat was almost on shore, and it was too late to seek another hiding place. The seamen at their landing observed my canoe, and rummaging it all over, easily conjectured that the owner could not be far off. 4 of them, well armed, searched every cranny and looking hole, till at last they found me flat on my face behind the stone,
They gazed, while in admiration of my strange, uncouth dress, my coat made of skins, my wooden-soled shoes, and my furred stockings, once, however, they concluded, I was not a native of this place, who go all naked. One of the seamen in Portuguese bid me rise and asked who I was. I understood that language very well, and getting on my feet I said I was a poor Yahoo banished from the Hohenhenems, and desire they would please let me depart. They admired to hear me answer them in their own tongue, but saw by my complexion I must be a European, but were at loss to know what I meant by Yahoos and Hohenhenems. And at the same time fell a laughing at my strange tongue in speaking, which resembled the neighing of a horse. I trembled all the while betwixt fear and hatred. I again desired to leave to depart, and was gently moving to my canoe, but they laid hold of me, desiring to know what country I was of, whence I came, with many other questions. I told them I was born in England, whence I came about 5 years ago, and their country and ours were at peace. I therefore hoped they would not treat me as an enemy, since I meant them no harm, but was yet a poor Yahoo seeking some desolate place to pass what remainder of this unfortunate life. When they began to talk, I thought I never heard or saw anything more unnatural, for it appeared to me as monstrous as if a dog and cow should speak in England, or a Yahoo in Hohenhenemland. The honest Portuguese were equally amazed at my strange dress and the odd manner of delivering my words, which, however, they understood very well. They spoke to me with great humanity, and said they were sure the captain would carry me gratis to Lisbon, whence I might return to my own country, that two of the seamen would go back to the ship, inform the captain of what they had seen, and receive his orders. In the meantime, unless I would give my solemn oath not to fly, they would secure me by force. I thought it best to comply with their proposal. They were very curious to know my story, but I gave them little satisfaction, and they all conjectured that my misfortunes had impaired my reason. In 2 hours the boat, which went laden with vessels of water, returned with the captain's command to fetch me on board. I fell on my knees to preserve my liberty, but it was all in vain, and the men, having tied me with cords, heaved me into the boat, whence I was taken into the ship, and thence to the captain's cabin. His name was Pedro de Mendes. He was a very courteous and generous person. He entreated me to give some account of myself, and desired to know what I would eat or drink. Said I should be used as well as himself, and spoke so many obliging things that I wondered to find such civilities from a Yahoo. However, I remained silent and sullen. I was ready to faint at the very smell of him and his men. At last I desired something to eat out of my own canoe, but he ordered me a chicken and some excellent wine, then directed that I should be put to bed in a very clean cabin. I would not undress myself, but lay on the bedclothes, and in a half an hour stole out when I thought the crew was at dinner, getting to my side of the ship, and was going to leap into the sea and swim for my life rather than continue among Yahoos, but one of the seamen prevented me, and having informed the captain, I was chained to my captain. After dinner, Don Pedro came to me and desired to know my reason for so desperate an attempt, assured me that he only meant to do me all the service he was able, and spoke so very movingly that at last I descended to treat him like an animal which had some very little portion of reason. I gave him a very short relation of my voyage, of the conspiracy against me by my own men, of the country which they sent me on shore, and of my 5 years' residence thence. All which he looked upon as if I were a dream or a vision, whereat I took great offence, for I had quite forgot the faculty of lying, so peculiar to Yahoos, in all countries where they preside, and consequently the disposition of suspecting truth in others of their own species. I asked him whether it were the custom in his country to say the thing which was not. I assured him I had almost forgot what he meant by falsehood, and if I had lived 1,000 years in Hohenhenemland, I should never have heard a lie in the meanest servant. But I was altogether indifferent whether he believed me or not. But, however, in return for his favours, I would give so much allowance to the corruption of his nature as to answer any objection he would please to make, and then he might easily discover the truth. The captain, a wise man, after many endeavours to catch me tripping in some part of my story, at last began to have a better opinion of my veracity. But he added that since I professed so inviolable an attachment to the truth, that I must give him my word and honour to bear him company in this voyage, without attempting anything against my life, or else he would continue me a prisoner until we were arrived in Lisbon. I gave him the promise he required, but at the same time protested that I would suffer the greatest hardships rather than return to live among Yahoos. Our voyage passed without any considerable accident. In gratitude to the captain, I sometimes sat with him at his earnest request, and strove to conceal my antipathy against humankind, although it often broke out, which he suffered to pass without observation. But the greatest part of the day I confined myself to my cabin, to avoid seeing any of the crew. The captain had often entreated me to strip myself of my savage dress, and offered to lend me the best suit of clothes he had. This I would not be prevailed on to accept, abhorring to cover myself with anything that had been on the back of a Yahoo. I only desired he would lend me two clean shirts, which, having been washed since he wore them, I would believed would not so much defile me. These I changed every second day and washed them myself. We arrived in Lisbon, November 5th, 1715. At our landing, the captain forced me to cover myself with his cloak, to prevent the rabble from crowding around me. I was conveyed to his own house. At my earnest request, he led me up to the highest room backwards. I conjured him to conceal from all persons what I have told him of the Hohenheims, because the least hint of such a story would not only draw numbers of people to see me, but probably put in danger of being prisoned or burnt by the Inquisition. The captain persuaded me to accept a suit of clothes newly made, but I would not suffer the tailor to take my measure. Don Pedro being almost of my size, they fitted me well enough. He accoutred me with some other necessities, and all new, which I aired for 24 hours before I would use them. The captain had no wife, nor above 3 servants, none of which were suffered to attend at meals, and his old deportment was so obliging, added to very good human understanding, that I really began to tolerate his company. He gained so far upon me that I ventured to look out the back window. By degrees I was brought into another room, whence I peeped into the street and drew my head back in a fright. In a week's time he seduced me down to the door. I found my terror gradually lessened, but my hatred and contempt seemed to increase. I was at last bold enough to walk the streets in his company, but I kept my nose well stopped with rue, or sometimes with tobacco. In 10 days, Don Pedro, to whom I had given some account of my domestic affairs, put it upon me as a matter of honour and conscience that I ought to return to my native country and live at home with my wife and children. He told me there was an English ship in the port just ready to sail, and he would furnish me with all things necessary. It would be tedious to repeat his arguments and my contradictions. He said it was altogether impossible to find such a solitary island as I desired to live in, but I might command in my own house and pass my time in a manner as a recluse as I pleased. I complied at last, finding I could not do better. I left Lisbon the 24th day of November in an English merchantman, but who was the master I never inquired. Don Pedro accompanied me to the ship and lent me £20. He took kind leave of me and embraced me at parting, which I bore as well as I could. During this last voyage I had no commerce with the master or any of his men, but pretending I was sick, kept close in my cabin. On the 5th of December, 1715, we cast anchor in the Downs, about 9 in the morning, and at 3 in the afternoon I got safe to my house at Rotherhithe. My wife and family received me with great surprise and joy, because they concluded me certainly dead. But I must freely confess the sight of them filled me with only hatred, disgust, and contempt, and the more by reflecting on the near alliance I had to them, for although, since my unfortunate exile from the Hohenheim country, I compelled myself to tolerate the sight of Yahoos and to converse with Don Pedro de Mendez, yet my memory and imagination were perpetually filled with the virtues and ideas of those exalted Hohenheims, and I began to consider that, by copulating with one of the Yahoo species, I had become a parent of more. It struck me with the utmost shame, confusion, and horror. As soon as I entered the house, my wife took me in her arms and kissed me, at which, having not been used to the touch of that odious animal for many years, I fell into a swoon for almost an hour. At the time I am writing, it is 5 years since my last return to England. During the first year, I could not endure my wife or children in my presence. The very smell of them was intolerable. Much less I could not suffer to eat in the same room. To this hour they dare not presume to touch my bread or drink out of the same cup. Neither was I ever to let one of them take me by the hand. The first money I laid out was to buy 2 young stone horses, which I keep in a good stable, and next to them the groom is my least favourite, for I feel my spirits revile by the smell he contracts in the stable. My horses understand me tolerably well, and I converse with them at least 4 hours every day. They are strangers to bridle or saddle. They live in great amity with me and friendship to each other. End of chapter 11. Read by David Russell. For Lit to Go. Available on the web at fcit.usf.edu.